Today we are starting the 9 days. Today is Rosh Chodesh Av. Today is the first of the 9 days, concluding with Tisha B'Av, where we have certain customs. One of the customs that we've established here over the years is that we go into a complete talk format, essentially a complete talk format, a format dominated by talk, during the 9 days. And that will conclude Tuesday with Tisha B'Av, Tuesday of next week. Wednesday of next week, the 10th of Av, we will play for you stories of Reb Shlomo Kalbach, which has become a tradition over the years. And then on the 11th of Av, a week from Thursday, we'll be back to our regular programming here at JM in the AM. Rabbi Beryl Wein has been the centerpiece of our 9 days programming for many, many years, and this year is no exception. The first lecture that we'll be listening to this season is from the series Rabbi Beryl Wein on Jewish values. And we open up a Monday morning with Rabbi Wein's lecture on pleasantness at JM in the AM.
This series concerns itself with what shall I say, the fifth section of the Shulchan Aruch. In back of the Shulchan Aruch is God. And that's the ultimate goal. And the values of Judaism are primary in influencing the other four sections of the Shulchan Aruch. And it's primary in assessing what a Jew should be. Now, we have very high standards. And even if we don't reach those standards, at least we have an idea of what we are striving for. And the Torah does not compromise its values. The Torah is willing to forgive people, but it's not willing to forgive values. By that I mean we're not allowed to change the value simply because I can't do it, or I didn't do it, or because it's hard. So for that we have a Yom Kippur. For that we have tshuva. For that we have all sorts of mechanisms that even if the person is not perfect, we can somehow raise him to some level of perfection. But the Torah never compromises its values. The Torah never says, well, since you can't do it, it's all right if you don't do it. And the Torah does not mark on a curve. The Torah does not say, you know, everybody does it, so we'll give you an A. And by the Torah, 60 is a 60, and an 80 is an 80, and 100 is 100. And so therefore, I felt that as a series, we should discuss and understand what these values are, their great importance, and how we see them reflected in the Torah itself. And many times we don't always see them reflected in Jews. Well, I've always said that one should never confuse Jews with Judaism. It's two different things. And we're talking here about Judaism, about what Yahadus, about what the Torah represents. And we certainly should never confuse religion with rabbis. And because of that, therefore, we have this system of values. Tonight's value that I'm going to discuss, which is the opening one in this series, has to do with pleasantness, with being nice. A trait that sometimes here in Israel people say, well, he's a friar, which is the ultimate insult in Israel. The ultimate insult is that you let the other guy cut in front of you in the lane. The second ultimate insult So the value of pleasantness is based upon a pasuk in Tehillim, and rather in Mishlei, that we all know, Drochea Darche Noam, V'chol Nesivo Seho Shalom. Drochea Darche Noam, the paths of the Torah are ways of pleasantness. And so even though that's a verse that we all know and we recite it when the Torah is put back in the Ark, but it's not meant to be merely a nice phrase. It is meant to apply to halacha and to how Jews behave. And I'm going to give you 8, 9, 10 examples of it tonight. This is certainly not a full discussion of the matter, but we'll see how this value of pleasantness applies in the Torah and in the Torah's outlook on how we should behave. The Sforno, Rabbeinu Ovadia Misforno, 15th century Italian doctor and rabbi. There was a period of time that a lot of the rabbis were doctors, or a lot of the doctors were rabbis. I don't know how it worked. And so he wrote a very, very famous commentary to Chumash. Sforno is the name of his town, but he's known as the Sforno. He immortalized this rather small Italian town by his parish. So he discusses the halachas of kashrus, which we read in Parsha Shmini, in Chumash Vayikra. So it says, Vesachayo asher tochelu. These are the creatures that you should eat, and these are the creatures that you should not eat. So he says, what difference does it make what we eat? Why should the Lord be interested, so to speak, in our diet? So he discards immediately, as a doctor, the idea of health, which is many times advanced as a reason for kashrus. Whether or not it's because he felt that this century's medicine is the next century's quackery. Medicine constantly changes. Or whether he felt that perhaps the kosher foods are not necessarily healthy foods. Having just survived Pesach, all of us can testify to that. Right? It's good old Eastern European Jewish food was cholesterol heaven. Kosher, but not necessarily healthy. And therefore, he doesn't accept health as being the reason. But he says as follows. He says that because there is such a thing as drochea darche noam, there's a pleasantness in eating. So not every food should be eaten, because the food itself is, so to speak, a violation of the pleasantness of life. And therefore, he says, Lo sitamu es nafshoseichem b'chol asheretz, all of the crawling things, the shellfish, etc. He says, these things, it's not nice. It doesn't appeal to our aesthetics. The fact that in the world it made to certain groups of people doesn't change the fact that in God's system of aesthetics, this is not nice to eat. Therefore, he says, it says, V'yisem gdoshim, you shall be holy. What is the definition of holy? The definition of holy is to be a pleasant person, to be able to stay away from things that are unpleasant. And therefore, he says, in the Torah, it says, V'nitmeisem bom, you become unholy, you become defiled by eating these creatures. So the Gemara says, Al tikre v'nitmeisem ele v'nitamtem. You become gross. You become boorish. You become unmannered. You become unpleasant by eating these things. In Yiddish you would say, verstopped. You're stopped up. And therefore he says that the halachas of what to eat and what not to eat stem from this idea of pleasantness. Stem from the ideas of Drochea Darchei Noam. And he says the same thing is true in the halachas of Taras HaMishpocha, of family purity, and the halachas of Zov and Nida and all and Yoledes, is all a question of pleasantness. Because in the ancient world it was a question of superstition. It was a question of disease. He says none of that applies. What applies here is this idea of pleasantness. And therefore, everything in life has to be done in a pleasant fashion. And therefore, he says, that's why in the Torah, the Torah is worried about not only what we eat, but how we eat. The Torah, for instance, is against fast foods. The Torah is against eating standing. The Torah has all sorts of, what do they care when I'm standing? The Gemara says that in today's world, we have different tests for making matches between men and women. Important items like what color tablecloth is used and other major issues. But one of the things the Gemara asks is, does the person eat in the street? Person that eats in the street, it's unpleasant. It's not manners. And Drochea Darchei Noam requires that we eat with manners as well. The din of Mayim Achronim is because of the fact they didn't have forks in the ancient world. Forks are an invention of the Middle Ages. And so people ate with their hands, with their fingers, so you had to wash off your fingers before being able to say Birchas Hamazon. And other things simply have to do with a pleasant way of life, a pleasant demeanor, an attitude of pleasantness in the world. And therefore he takes the laws of kashrus, which we would say have nothing to do with this, and he inserts it under this value, that what we eat and how we eat, the way we eat, and the Gemara says, you know, you're supposed to limit conversation while you're eating because ain't masichim besuda. The Gemara has all sorts of, who asked them? The Gemara is not Emily Post, it's not an etiquette book. And the answer is because it all comes under this rubric, it all comes under this title of pleasantness. And there's a pleasant way to eat. And the Torah describes it for us. And this is further enhanced by the fact that the Gemara teaches us, and it became one of the principles of the Bali Musar, and Bishoel Salanter wrote, Odom nifal al yedei pulosav. A person is created by his actions, by what he does. We think of it in the opposite. You know, the person is this and this type of person, therefore he does this and this and this. And Bishoel Salanter turned that on its head. He said, if you will do these and these actions, then you'll become this and this type of person. And therefore, Drochea Darchei Noam, if you will be pleasant, then if you do pleasant things, you will somehow become a pleasant person, even if you start out being an unpleasant person. Because Odom Nifal Al Yirei Pulosov, a person is fashioned according to the behavior, according to what he does. So we'll see, the Sefurno continues and says a remarkable insight. Shemi asher midosov mikulkolos umetumtomos. You have a person that he has bad character, bad behavior, he's an unpleasant person, and he's a completely observant Jew. It's what the Ramban calls a novel birshus HaTorah. Because without the values, without the fifth section of the Shulchan Aruch, the first four are not going to do it. So he says, Bal korcho yagia lemaskonos madoyos. He said, people will then come because their behavior, their attitude, their manners are bad. So after a while, they will substitute their behavior and their understanding of right and wrong for the absolute understanding that the Lord and the Torah gave us. And they'll come out lo nechonos. They will do things that are wrong. Elo lo avdu Yisrael avodazora lahatir lehem aroyos. The Gemara says the Jews never believed in avodazora. They never believed in paganism. Jews never believed that this idol can do anything for me. So then why do they worship idols during the entire time of the first temple? For hundreds of years. Because idolatry allowed them to be sexually immoral, and that's what they wanted. But you couldn't get up and say, I want to be sexually immoral. So you got up after a while, because you were sexually immoral, you got up and I said, well, I'm pagan. And in paganism, it's allowed. And if we'll substitute other things today, you'll hear it very clearly, right? I'm allowed. Because I'm doing it. So when I create a philosophy to justify my behavior. And therefore, he says, you see how important the Rabbonu Shel Olam felt, Kaviyochel, in this idea of Jocheh Darchei Noam, in the first chapter in Bereishis. God says, Naase odom b'tzalmeinu chidmuseinu. Now the word naase implies that he was talking to someone. It also implies that he was asking permission from someone. It also implies that someone helped him create human beings. Naase, let us together make. Now all of that is nonsense. Because God has no partners. So then why does it say Naaseh? So Rashi already comments that the Torah is teaching us here ways of pleasantness. That even the greatest of people, even the chief justice, even the president, even the prime minister, should not take unilateral action without consulting with others. And that in order to put that lesson across, that if you want to have a pleasant society, you cannot act unilaterally. You cannot do on important issues what I want to do. But you have to speak to others and see what they say as well. So the Torah risked the fact that there will come people and say, well, look in the Bible. In the Bible it says, let us make man. So it must be that there is something else besides God. And in Christology, that is used, right, as part of the Trinity, the us. So the Sephorno says, so then why did God do that? Why did God risk to put the word Nasa when evidently it is a word that can cause great problems. So he says, Shehechlit HaKadosh Baruch Hu lehistaken betos philosophis. God was willing to take the risk that philosophically people will make a mistake. And they'll say, Shtei Rishuyos, that there's more than one God in heaven. Bilvad lelamed osonu, because he wanted to teach us as Torah's ha'anova, the necessity for modesty, the necessity for humility, the necessity to consult with others, the necessity not to say, ani ve'afsiod, I'm the only one that knows what's right, I'm the only one that can do it, it's me. And God wanted that lesson, that value. That value of the fact that others have to somehow also be consulted. That's so important that God risked the word nasa, because the gain from understanding that the Ribono Shel Olam himself, Kaviyochol, is willing to consult, that lesson is a greater gain than the risk of the loss that people will think that there's more than one God in the world. And therefore he says, Ki besofo shel dovar, the bottom line is, Ha'ashkofos holchos achar hamidos, behavior governs. And if you have good behavior, so then lochein im yilmedu midos tovos, memele yagiyu lidei muskolos nechonos, then you will have correct attitudes and correct hashkofos as well, because your behavior will shape how you look at the world and how you look at others. I remember when I was in the yeshiva in Chicago a few days ago. It really feels like a few days ago, you know, when you get to my age, so then all of a sudden you start remembering. You start forgetting also, but you start remembering. So in the yeshiva, I went to the yeshiva in a time when none of us had any money. No, we had an allowance, a dollar a week maybe. And you had to give tzedakah from it, and you paid your car fare from it, and you bought the candy bar from it, and that was it. Because my parents had no more, and there were boys and my friends that didn't even have the dollar. So every day in the yeshiva, in davening, they would pass around the pushka, the tzedakah box. And the tzedakah box, you'd put in a penny, 2 pennies, because you only had a dollar. I mean, how much could you afford? And the tzedakah box always made noise. So, you know, you're never as clever and astute as when you're 15 years old. Because from then on, it's downhill all the way. But when you're 15, you understand it all. You got it all very clear. So I remember I went over to the Mashgiach, the Rabbi Wernick, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, and I said, Rebbe, you know, they pass around the pushka, and everybody puts in a penny. I mean, the end of the week, you got $3 from the whole yeshiva, and it makes noise, and it's in the middle of Chazaras Hashatz, and it's not nice. So he says to me, he said, you know why we pass around the pushka? Because we're training you to give tzedakah every day. To put your hand in your pocket, and every day. He said, today you can only give a penny. He said, there'll come a day you'll be able to give a dollar. There'll be a day that you'll be able to give $100. But if your hand is not trained, if it's atrophied, if Chas V'Sholem, you know, the person is paralyzed, he can't, he never put his hand in his pocket. So even when he has it, even when he wants to, he can't do it. I remember I once went with the Ponovizhirov to see a Jew who was notorious for being a miser. And I said, Rebbe, we're wasting our time. And he said, no, we're going to do him a favor. He said, we're going to rip the money out of him. We're doing him the biggest favor. We're going to rip it out of him. And he did. I mean, it was a masterpiece. You know, and it was a sizable check. The man couldn't sign the check. It took him 10 minutes. He picked up the pen, he put it down, he picked it up, he started to sign, he stopped. He just couldn't do it. His hand didn't write. And that's after he committed and he said he was going to do it and he knew he was going to do it. But because he never gave, so then you can't do it. So this idea, the Sephorno says, is drachea darchei noam, if you live a life of pleasantness, so then you change yourself. And your attitudes change. Your behavior governs your attitude. But if first you want to become a pleasant person, and then you're going to do pleasant things, unlikely that it will ever happen. If you want to think through the entire philosophy of charity and philanthropic behavior, it's not likely that you're going to be a charitable person. A charitable person has to train oneself. I always remembered the words of the Mashgiach because of the fact that the truth of the matter is that you have to train people. We are just like all of the other in the animal kingdom as far as that is concerned, that we can be trained. That really was the idea of the Musar movement, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Musar movement, is that he wanted people to have the values of Torah, and the only way to have the values of Torah was to train them to do things. And the Musar movement was a great success in 19th and early 20th century Lithuania. It was destroyed in the Holocaust. It has never been rebuilt. It is one of the great victims of the Holocaust, of which there are many. Not only are people victims and families are victims, and the Jewish people are victims because of what was destroyed. Let's proceed to another idea in which we see Drachea d'Archei Noam. It says in the Torah, Kol almono v'ger lo sa'anun. You shall not persecute, afflict, take advantage of the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. So Rashi says, Hu adin l'chol adam. It's not restricted to the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. You can't do it to anybody. Why did the Torah mention specifically the widow, the orphan, and the stranger? Because they're pretty much defenseless. They're more vulnerable to people taking advantage of them. They don't have someone to defend them. And therefore, the Torah puts special emphasis on the fact that you shall not oppress the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. That's Rashi's pshat. The Rambam has a different view completely. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos, he counts the 613 mitzvahs. So the Rambam generally says, I will only count the mitzvah. That's a category. Underneath that category, there can be many sub-things, things that come under that, that are mitzvahs, but that's not the 613. So for instance, the Rambam has Avodah Zorah, so then he counts, you know, all the types of Avodah Zorah, but they are not a separate mitzvah in the 613. They're all under the general category of Avodah Zorah. So the Rambam here, according, if he would adopt Rashi's opinion, he would put down the fact that you're not allowed to take advantage and persecute another person, period. And the other person includes everybody, the widow, the orphan, the stranger. The Rambam has individual mitzvahs. You're not allowed to persecute someone or take advantage of someone. That's a regular person, Odom Ragil. And then he says you're not allowed to take advantage of an almona. And then he says another mitzvah, you're not allowed to take advantage of a yatom, of an orphan. And then he says another mitzvah, you're not allowed to take advantage of the ger. So the Rambam's got four mitzvahs where Rashi had one. So then why did the Rambam have four? So the Rambam saw in the attitude and the behavior towards the widow, the orphan, and the stranger, he saw a different attitude than in the attitude towards an Odom Ragil. So therefore he says as follows, Bishum shedrochea darchei noam, because the Torah is the Torah of pleasantness. And therefore the halacha is, not only shall you not take advantage, that's not sufficient. Elo yedaveri mohem dvorim rarakim biyoser ubanachas. To these people you have to speak nicely, softly, gently. Somebody else you can holler at. Somebody else you can speak firmly. But an almona yosem and a ger, the Rambam says you have to speak dvorim rakim biyoser ubanachas. And you have to treat them in the best way possible. And your attitude towards them has to be the best attitude possible. The Rambam keeps on saying, Beoser, more than what anyone else. And you should try and do more and more in this matter. Because that's Drochei Adar Chinoam. So now we see that Drochei Adar Chinoam is a sliding scale. It depends who, and we'll see in a minute, it depends on the person himself or herself who's doing the action. Who is he? And then it depends on the recipient, right? Who you're talking to. And if that person, the Rambam says, is an almona, a ger, or a yosom, so then you're held to a different standard. That's a different mitzvah. And that mitzvah is impelled because of the fact that we have raised the bar of Drochei Adar Chinoam. Our definition of being pleasant has been raised. And unless we are aware of that, so then we miss the value that the mitzvah attempted to put within us. There's an interesting point that the Ramban makes in his introduction to the Chumash, his parish to the Chumash, the Torah. The Ramban, as you all know, is a great mekubal. The Ramban is probably the first person that put out a perush to the Torah al pi Kabbalah. He calls it al pi derech sod, the secret, or sometimes you call it al pi derech ha'emes, the true way. But he says Kabbalah. He says his commentary in the rational way. But then he always adds Kabbalistic ideas. The Ramban says in the introduction, and then it's strange why then he put it. He said, "Forget about the Kabbalah that I write in my parish. Don't bother to look at it, unless you're a great mekubal, unless you yourself are immersed in Kabbalah." And he doesn't mean the Kabbalah Center in Los Angeles. Unless you are immersed in Kabbalah, he says, don't read it. It's not for you. Because the Torah is Drochei Adar Chinoam. It's the way of pleasantness. And Kabbalah is not the way of pleasantness. Because it raises us to a world that we don't understand and we don't see. And if you learn the Torah, or if you're involved in Kabbalah, and you don't understand it, and you're not worthy of it, so then the Torah is unpleasant to you. Because then the Torah says fanciful things that you have no idea what they're talking about. And therefore he says, Al Yaharsu El Hashem Liros. So this first part of the introduction is hardly ever taught. But it's the basis of a lot of problems in the Jewish world. He says, Al Yaharsu Lalos El Hashem. He quotes the Pasuk that the Jewish people shouldn't run up the mountain of Sinai to come see God. Ki Hashem Elokeinu Eish Ochla. God is an all-consuming fire. Hu El Kanos. He is the God of zealousness. Vuhu Yire Es Ritzuyov Mitoroso Niflos. And he shows to those who are able to see it wonders. However, Begodol Mimcha Al Tidrishu. But what is greater than you, farther than you, more than what you are, don't search there. Bechozok Mimcha Al Tachkor. What is too strong for you, don't bother to investigate it. Bemuflo Mimcha Balteda. In what is wiser than you, you'll never understand. Bimechusa mimcho al tishal. And what is covered from you, don't bother to ask. Bame she erishus hisbonein. You think about what you have permission to think about, meaning the niglet, a revealed Torah, ve'ein lecha eshek b'nistoros, and you have no business with the higher elements, with the Kabbalah, with the secret Torah, etc. Because then you destroy the drachei adar chenoam. And that's what the Gemara says, arbo nichnasu lapardes. Four great rabbis entered the realm of metaphysics, the realm of Kabbalah. So one was Shimon ben Zoma. Shimon ben Zoma lost his mind, became insane from the matter. One was Shimon ben Azai, who never married or had a family. One was Elisha ben Avuya, who became an apostate, became an apikoros. And Rabbi Akiva was the only one that got in and got out whole. So again, why? Because it's not Darchei Noam, right? It's not the example that the Bali Musa always gave is that if you go to someone's house, it's not manners to go traipsing around the house and opening every closet. Unless you're the mother-in-law, but otherwise... otherwise, it doesn't happen, right? It's none of your business. So the Bali Musar say that the Torah is our house. And when you come in, we're invited into the house, so you see the living room, the dining room, the kitchen maybe, and you know, that's open for you. But to go around, what are you doing opening the closet, right? It's not pleasant, it's not manners. It's not acceptable behavior. So he takes this idea and applies it to Kabbalah. And he says, Kabbalah is opening the closet. So if you're worthy, if you're Rabbi Akiva, if you're a great Mekubal, if you're the Ari, okay, Mele. But for ordinary people who really are not grounded in Kabbalah and who have no experience in the matter, so then it's just ill-mannered. It's not drachei darchei noam. It's not pleasant. And because it's not pleasant, then you're not allowed to do it. It's not nice. We live in a time when, you know, Kabbalah is just wonderful, right? Everybody's a Kabbalist. From Madonna upwards. Everybody's into it. Everybody wants spiritual. But the Torah is not made that way. The Torah is meat and potatoes. Everybody wants dessert. Right? You go to a restaurant, you order five desserts. Good. But that's also not Darchei Noam. And therefore, that was always the reluctance of great sections of the Jewish people to even discuss Kabbalah publicly or to have it out in the public domain, because of the fact that it violates this principle of pleasantness, of drachei adarchei noam. The Rambam says another idea of drachei adarchei noam, all of which we see in this value cuts across all of Torah. The famous question is asked, the Ramban and the Rambam discuss it, why were the Egyptians punished? God said, Kiger yezaracha beretz lo lahem, he told Avram Avinu that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, vavodum v'inu osam arba meos shona, and they will be slaves and they'll be tortured for 400 years, v'achakein yetzu v'chush godol, and then they'll be redeemed, they'll go out with it. So if God said it was going to happen, what do you want from the Egyptians? They just did what God said was going to happen. So the Ramban says that the Egyptians were punished because they enjoyed it and they overdid it. You can be a stranger and you can be a servant. You don't have to have a quota of bricks without straw, and you don't have to take children and mortar them into the walls. And Ramban says that they were punished for the excess. But he accepts the fact that the Egyptians somehow had an excuse that they could have said, we only did what God told us to do. The Rambam doesn't tolerate that. The Rambam says, God didn't say they had to do it. God just, not a commandment. God is just telling Avraham Avinu that such a thing will happen. It will happen, he said. But it isn't, I'm not commanding anybody to do it. Because to command somebody to do it is not Jochea Darche Noam. It's not pleasant. That's not me. I never command any that such a thing should happen. And therefore he says, the Egyptians violated the Jochea Darche Noam. He says, why? First of all, Asher lo yodayas Yosef. They were ungrateful. They had ingratitude for what Yosef did for them. And that is the root of being an unpleasant person, is someone that has no sense of gratitude, no sense of appreciation, no sense of what was done for him. So then that's an that itself is a violation of the principle. And therefore, the Rambam says that they were punished, the Egyptians were punished because they had no right to do it from the beginning. And that their behavior was a violation of Jochea Darche Noam. And therefore the Makos that came against them, the plagues, were justified, and being drowned at the Red Sea was justified, simply because in fact that was the fruits of their own behavior, of how they themselves worked at it. The Rambam continues regarding Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is punished. What is he punished for? Well, he hit the rock, so he hit the rock. So for that, you don't go there to soil. Jewish agency was unwilling to pick him up. Why? He hit the rock. So the Rambam has a theory. The Rambam's theory regarding Moshe is that's the point that I made before, that since Moshe is the greatest of all human beings, so therefore his ways of pleasantness are held to the highest standard. Anger by Moshe is unacceptable. By Moshe, anger is not Jochea Darche Noam. And since it says, Vayikzov Moshe, Moshe was angry, and in his anger he smote the rock, so it's not because he smote the rock, it's because he was angry. So Moshe violates his own principle of Jochea Darche Noam. Where do we see the Jochea Darche Noam by Moshe? We see it, he's willing to sit all day and all night and judge the Jewish people by himself. His father-in-law comes along, all fathers-in-law have better ideas. His father-in-law comes along and says, Novel Tibol, you'll waste away, this is not the way to do it. We make an administration of justice, we'll put it all together for you. And Moshe accepts it. What did Moshe think in the beginning? Everything that Yisrael told him he knew in the beginning. So the Rambam says, in the beginning he thought that Jochea Darche Noam compelled him to do it. A Jew comes and he has a problem. He has a din Torah, and Moshe is going to say, you know, go see Shmerel, I'm busy. Go to this court, go to the Pakid. It's not Jochea Darche Noam, I came to see you. Everybody wants to have the din Torah by Moshe, right? Nobody wants to have the din Torah by Shmerel. So Moshe felt that Jochea Darche Noam, being a pleasant person, he has to submit himself to that discipline, to that regimen. He has to judge every case. He has to answer every question. When I was the head of the OU, also a few days ago, so I would get calls from my mashgichim, from those that were the kashrus supervisors. So in California, they were 3 hours behind. And then I had guys in Hawaii, and I had guys in Thailand. So they called me 2 a.m, 3 a.m. He get on the phone, he would say, Rabbi Vine, he said, I'm calling you now, I don't want to bother you in the office. But, you know, you got to take it, right? Because if you're, what I'm going to tell them, don't call me. So the next time, you know, they'll have a crisis and he won't call me. So Moshe is always at the service of the people. And therefore, Moshe has this supreme value of Jocher Darchenoam. If you have this supreme value of Jocher Darchenoam, then what are you getting angry for? Who said that anger is permissible? And that, the Rambam says, was the source of why he wouldn't come into Eretz Yisrael. Because of the anger, not because of the action. We have another example. How the Torah itself in its wording is careful about Rachel Darche Noam. You have to pay attention to the words of the Torah. Yosef HaTzadik goes to look for his brothers. Can't find them. He meets a man in the street, in the field. And he says to them, to him, did you see my brothers? You know, 10 guys in black hats walking around. Did you see them? You have any doubt that the Shvatim wore the... So the man answers him, Cain, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Shomati, I heard them say, Nelcho Dosoina. We're going to Dosan. So the Gemara Darshans, the Medrash Darshans on the word Nelchu Dosoina, that from the word Nochel, a conspiracy, Nochle Das, they already conspired to make a law to justify the fact that they were going to kidnap and sell Yosef. And that idea is what the Torah is telling us when it says Nelchu Dosoina, because who cares where they went, right? I mean, it's not germane to the story. The Mefarshim say, Rashi is the one that says it here on the Pasuk, Nichle Dosos, Avol Kol Zeh Rak Beremes. The Torah didn't say that. The Torah said simply what? Nelchu Dosoina, we're going to Dosa. We take the words Nelchu Dosoina and we read into it the fact that they made this conspiracy. Why didn't the Torah say it? Because if the Torah would have said it, the whole story would be much clearer. And you wouldn't ask, why did the Torah write where they went? Who cares where they went? So he says, Mishum Jocheo Darche Noem, Bechol Zerak Beremes. We don't want to say with a full mouth. It's not nice that the Torah should write with a full mouth what the brothers were going to do. And therefore the Torah left it over only hidden in the words. So that if you want to, you can read the Parsha simply, quickly. They went to Dosan, fine. But if you really want to understand it, it means more than that. It means they conspired to destroy him. But the Torah won't say it openly. Rashi says the same thing in the beginning of Chumash Dvarim. In the beginning of Chumash Dvarim, so it says, Ela advorim asher diber Moshe ish alakim al b'nei Yisrael lifnei Moso, and then it lists all the places that the Jewish people went. Chatzeros v'dizahov, etc. So Rashi says, lefishein divrei tochochos. Moshe is going to tell them off now, right? Moshe is going to, you know, the last speech, so he's going to tell the members really what he thinks. So he's going to tell, he's going to give him tochocha, he's going to give him a hard time now. Umono kan kola makomos shehir shiu lifnei amokom bohen. And therefore he names every place where the Jewish people sinned in the desert. Lefichoch sosa mesadvorim. But it doesn't say that. It's just names places, right? So if you learn it simply, you know, you just pass it by. So he's just telling you, Bein Tofel, Dizohov, Chatzeros, all of these different places, oases in the desert. Not more than that. So Rashi says, Hiskirom Beremes, they only alluded to it. B'nei kvodon shel Yisrael, because he didn't want to insult the Jewish people. And therefore he only alluded to it. Amevin yovin. Those that get it, will get it. And those that don't get it, leave them alone. Because Jochea Darche Noam, the Torah is not going to say it with a full mouth. The Torah doesn't criticize in that fashion. And so that even in the words of the Torah itself is bound by this value of the fact that it has to do it in a pleasant way. I knew a Jew in Chicago that was in the Kollel in Eish HaShok when the Chafetz Chaim ran the Kollel. So he told me once that he missed one or two Sdorim to learn. Whatever happened, he didn't show up. So the Chafetz Chaim called him in to call him on the carpet. So he said the Chafetz Chaim turned around. He didn't look at him. He turned around. He talked to the wall, literally to the wall. And he said, I don't know. Some people don't come to the Seder. I don't know. How can it be that some people shouldn't come to the Seder? They shouldn't come to learn when they should come to learn. I don't know how such a thing happens. And he's got his back to him the whole time. He's not talking to him. And he says, it must be that there was a good reason. Because it couldn't be that people shouldn't come to the Seder when they're supposed to come to the Seder. So there must have been a very good reason. So I'm sure that the person, once the reason is settled, will come to the Seder whenever he has to come. That was the speech. It's beremes to be able to tell somebody something without telling it to them. Because that's Jochea Darche Noam. A famous story with the Chafetz Chaim that I heard from the Ponovitch Rav, that the Ponovitch Rav said that he saw it, that the Chafetz Chaim went to collect money for the yeshiva, and a person came and gave him a large donation and stuck out his hand to him, but the person was not a Shomer Shabbos at a time when most Jews were. He was not a Sabbath observer. So the Chofetz Chaim took his hand and he looked at him and he said, Azah guter hand zol brennen in Gehenim. He said, such a good hand should burn in hell? How could that be? So he didn't give him any mussar on being a Shomer Shabbos. And the Ponovitch Rav told me the man became a Shomer Shabbos immediately. He just terrorized him. So that's Jochea Darche Noam. It says in the Torah, "Vayikru Elokim laor yom, velachoshech kora loila." The Rabboni Shalom called light day, velachoshech kora loila. Doesn't say God called darkness night. By or it says the name of Hashem, "Vayikru Elokim laor yom, lachoshech." It doesn't say Elokim. It doesn't say anybody. Kora loila was called night. Because Jochea Darche Noam, night people are afraid of. It's dark. We don't want to put God's name there. So the Torah only said, Lachoshech Kor Eloila. By Or, it says, Vayikra Elokim Laor Yom. We have a halacha that women are not mitzuva al piri of a rivia. Women are not commanded to have children. Well, if men are commanded to have children, and women are not commanded, how does it happen? How then? What's the logic in the halacha? All the mefarshim say that God placed the maternal instinct within women, and women want children and families, etc., etc. That still begs the question. So the mefarshim say, because childbirth is a painful experience, a greatly painful experience, the Torah cannot command somebody to go through painful experiences. So the Torah says it's not a mitzvah. Aye, it happens, etc. Good, fine. That's the way the world is going to work. Excellent. But to say that's a mitzvah, I told you to do it, and then to suffer that pain, that's not Jochea Darche Noam. The Torah wouldn't do it. The Rashbam of Bava Basra says, the Rashbam is Rashi's grandson, So in the laws of inheritance in the Torah, in the Parsha of the daughters of Tzlofchad, so in the laws of inheritance, the laws are that if a man has a son, then the son inherits him. If a man has no sons, then the daughters inherit. If a man has no sons or daughters, so then the father of the man inherits. It goes up. It's always in a vertical line. But if you look in the Chumash, it doesn't say that. In the Chumash, it says that the brothers inherit, not the father. So then how do we reconcile the fact that the halacha is that it's the father who inherits, and the Chumash says the brothers that inherit? So the Rashbam says, it's drachea darche noam, that a father, should God forbid, inherit a son, is not pleasant. And therefore the Torah didn't want to write it. The Torah left it for Torah Shebal Peh, they'll straighten it out. Then the halacha will come out straight. But that we should say such a thing, it's not drachea darche noam. And the Torah therefore didn't want to say it. So you see that drachea darche noam governs the Torah itself. The Torah is not unpleasant. Tell you one last point also, that the Gemara in Yevamos discusses a man that had two wives, and he died without children, and one of the wives has to have Yibum, or Chlitza, and what happened with the other? And the other wife went off and got married. And so it's a machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, whether what the other wife needed, that she need anything or not. So Beis Shammai says that she also needed chalitza. She had to have the ceremony of chalitza in order to marry. So the Gemara says, but she already married. So the Gemara says, but if she gets chalitza now after she's married, her husband will feel very uncomfortable with her, because he'll think that they were not legitimately married before. So the Gemara says, who cares? What do I care if the husband feels uncomfortable or not? So the Gemara says, Drachea darche noam. What are you talking about? Well, you can't say that we're going to put them in an uncomfortable situation. The Torah is pleasantness. The Torah is Drachea darche noam. But the Gemara in Sukkah says, you're not allowed to have a lulav that has jagged edges at the side, because you may cut yourself. Drachea darche noam, the Gemara says. The Torah is pleasant. The Torah would never tell you to take a lulav that can cut you. So we see from all of this that the only way that a Jew can reach what he should be is by applying drachea darche noam in every facet of one's behavior in life. And therefore we say you have to do mitzvahs pleasantly, you have to treat people pleasantly, you have to treat yourself pleasantly. And the Gemara says that the whole idea of obscenities and of evil speech, etc., is because it's not darche noam, it's not pleasant. Nobody likes to hear it. And therefore this is one of the overriding values that sets us on the path that the Torah wanted us to achieve, and makes us v'yisem kadoshim ki kadosh oni, allows us to at least aspire to be a holy people and to emulate our Creator, who is also, so to speak, bound by this concept and value of pleasantness.
This concludes this lecture by Rabbi Beryl Wein. For information, please contact the Destiny Foundation at 1-800-499-WINE.
That is the phone number, 1-800-499-WEIN, for information about any of Rabbi Beryl Wein's lectures. And you can also go to the web, rabbiwein.com, rabbiwein.com.